Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So it's been not a very eventful week in Lake Wobegon, but we've had stuff going on here. What have we had? We've had visitors. We had a play date.
Oh, yeah, right. That's right.
Hi, Zena.
My friend Zena came with her two youngest girls, Emma and Fiona. Emma is Lucy's age. They're about 2 weeks apart.
In fact, it's traditional at this time of year
right.
for them to celebrate the birthdays at the same time. They have their birthdays around the same time. So in the past, they've even had like a combined cake at this time.
Yeah, we had a more subdued get together this time. We had some mochi and and Zena very kindly picked up some Jamaican food from our place down the street, which she'd really wanted to try. And so all the kids were very, very happy.
And she liked it too, right?
And she liked it too. Yeah. I don't think her kids were as so adventuresome as to try it, but.
Yeah, the Ben particularly liked the chicken, I think. It's not a sweet and sour, but sweet and spicy chicken.
Actually, I think he ate like two servings of the jerk chicken.
Yeah, which is amazing to have done that. So again, this place is fabulous. Just to keep repeating that. But we are spreading the word to everybody needs to try everything jerk. So what else we do? So it was a very nice visit. I always enjoy having Zena come over, and I'm usually working in the office, but I'll come out for lunch and she'll be here, and we get to chat a bit, which is nice. I always love to have her come by. I would love to see Jeff, her husband, and chat, but maybe someday we'll have a couples get together or something. That would be nice.
I think the traffic works out so that it's easier for her to come this way than it is for us to trek that way.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. I know the traffic, the way the traffic flows in Boston is.
Yeah. But I think we are now to the point where they've come here more than we've gone there. So
it is time.
Probably owe a visit.
It is time to trek up that way. And so the other thing that we did this week is this big thing that we've been preparing for, the Cub Scout Klondike. So I'm not sure if they do this in all of the rest of the country. Probably in the cold areas, but I'm not sure so much in the South, where it's a day event, and it started originally as Boy Scouts, so the teens. And at some point, someone said, we should let the Weeblos come. And as such things happen, it eventually became a Weeblo event. It was all Weeblos. And what happens is each pack sends their Weeblos with one or two sleds, they look like dog sleds. They're essentially dog sleds that they built or have built or have been passed down through the generations.
Like a legacy sled?
Yes. Yeah. For, over years, although they need to be rebuilt every once in a while because they do break down. And you have like maybe five or six kids. If you have many more than that, then you probably have two sleds or whatever. And the sleds are nominally on skis, on some type of ski surface. But as is very so often the case here, we usually have in January in this area, and we don't often have snow on the ground in the Boston area in January, especially south of Boston. I don't know what it is. Sometimes we will, but we often get our snow pack like in January, February, March. I mean, although I have to say, this has been a very light snow season.
It has been.
We have,
although we got some early snow in December.
Yeah. Knock on wood. When the snowblower was broken, which is nice. And now the snowblower is working and we are getting, that's the way it goes. I get that. So these sleds will often have wheels to go with it. And So our pack hadn't had a sled. We'd borrowed one last year. And one of the den leaders, the Weebelo den leader, Adam, who he's a Boilermaker.
A Boilermaker.
He belongs to the Boilermakers Union, which means it's not that he's a bartender who makes a drink with whiskey and beer, but is in fact, or went to Purdue University, but is in fact someone who, he, you know, who welds things for a living. He told me he worked in a nuclear power plant.
Interesting.
Like inside, you know, checking, you know, in the tank, looking down, looking at fuel rods.
Oh my.
Yes,
wow.
That's quite a job. I'm not sure I would be, after having seen Chernobyl, I'm not sure I want to be anywhere near the interior of a nuclear power plant. I know our American ones are much safer, but yeah. So but now he does more supervisory stuff and I guess other things. But anyway, he knows his way around welding and, you know, that sort of things. And so he built this sled that the kids had, and it was this great sled and had convertible wheels. You could take the wheels off and put the skis on in their place. And so the way the day works is you get there. It's Camp Squano. It's a Boy Scout camp. I'm just going to say Boy Scout camp and just be done with it. I'm trying to maneuver around the new terminology of BSA Scout is too much. I'm just going to say Boy Scout camp in the Miles Standish State Forest in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Deep in the forest, it's like a half hour on the highway to the forest to get there, mm-hmm. and then a half hour driving through the forest. I mean, it takes a while to get in there. This is a pretty deep for this area. And there were something like 45 different packs, so 45 sleds.
Wow, there. That's a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot of kids and their parents and their leaders. And they have the opening ceremony, then they have these stations that they go to where there are these different activities for them to do. Some of them demonstrating skills like first aid, others demonstrating teamwork, and that sort of stuff. And some of them are scored and others are just for fun. And then at the end of the day, they score up and the teams who, you know, who did the best on each of the scored ones get a prize. But then at the end of the day, there's a sled race, the Klondike Derby. And all the sleds they race across a field and there's multiple heats and then there's the final heat and then they win. And the other part of this, so Ben was going to do this, which is great because Ben is a, Weeblos is a 2-year program and Ben is the only second year Weeblo. And there was a whole bunch of these younger kids who were the first year Weeblos. And so we wasn't sure whether he'd be able to do it. Well, he went and did it with these other kids, which was great. And he had a blast. But the nice thing is to run each of these stations, they often get Boy Scouts or BSA Scouts to run them. And so the girls, Bella and Sophie, their troop, the four of them, were running this one station called the Arctic Spiderweb.
It's a great name.
It is great. So the way this works is there's a pavilion, kind of like a picnic pavilion. You know, if you go to a park, uh-huh. and there's tables underneath the pavilion. So there's a pavilion. We take the tables out, and some of the adults, some of the guys, they run rope back and forth around ankle or knee height through it to make this web that goes in a sort of in a U-shape course. So in or to the left and then back out again. Okay. And the way it works is that each sled team has to carry their sled through the web in and then around and out in it's timed, but they're also scored on how their teamwork and their scout spirit.
Teamwork and scout spirit.
Yes. So it became apparent which kids practiced, which kid, you know, before coming to the day and what kids were working well together, had good leadership among themselves. And it was interesting. It turns out the best thing to do would be to lift the sled above your head and carry it through that way. But also it made a difference if your sled was light versus heavy. Some of these sleds were heavier than others. We were running that all day. And then Adam and Chris. So Adam's both the Weeble den leader, but he's also the assistant scoutmaster for the girls troop. He's doing two things. And Chris is the scoutmaster. So they were running things. And I just hung out there because Ben went with the Weeblos and they were off doing their thing and he was fine. He was having fun. Did I mention how cold it was? I didn't mention
that
yet.
You did not mention this. It was in the teens all day. The high was like 18 degrees.
It was so... by the end of the day, I was so cold. My fingers were cold. My feet were cold. I wasn't sure I could... it would get warm again. I spent most of the day by they had a fire, campfire at the station. And I just stayed by the Arctic Spiderweb. I just stayed over there most of the day. And Adam's over there. He's cooking. Adam is the wilderness man. He's the guy who goes out into the forest and he camps in the middle of the forest. You know, I almost said jungle in the national forest. Hikes out into nowhere, stops, sets up his hammock, camps. You know, that sort of thing. So he's a wilderness man, and so he made a prime rib roast, a ribeye roast, in a tin foil oven, which is like tin foil inside a cardboard box. He made potatoes, asparagus. They had bacon burgers and hot dogs and sausages and all this food that he was cooking all day. And all the adults are coming through with their packs. And they're like, what's that? What are you doing? Cause the Boy Scouts, the camp provides a meal, but it's like hot dogs, canned soup, bag of chips, you know, in the dining hall, and we're like, yeah, we're gonna eat this. So it was kind of awesome. That I gotta say, that part was really good. And I mean, I ate way too much.
I think Isabella said that she had both the
yes
both
we did.
Meals.
We did go over to the hall. Ben wanted hot dogs, and because we paid for it, so we might as well go over and get what they had and to get warm. Mainly, I wanted to be in the dining hall to get warm. They had hot chocolate in there. You know, it was nice. Yum. Yeah, so it was fun. It was good. It was a good time. And then at the end of the day, the girls' troop they were picked to do the opening ceremony. So there'd be the color guard to put up the flag. Mm-hmm. That was really nice. I think I have photos of that. I don't think I showed you those ones, but I have photos of that. And at the end of the day,
you texted me one photo.
Okay. There was the race, and you know, just to get to the whole punchline, Ben's sled team won the overall race. They were the fastest team overall. They won both their heat and the final race, which was awesome. He was so excited. I was so happy for
him. Yeah, he was on
over the
walking
moon
on air. It was great.
Oh, they were so fast. I mean, the sled helped a little bit. it was a good sled. Adam was very proud of his sled.
But teamwork also counts a lot.
Oh yes, they worked well together. They thought through a strategy, because the sled, you have to put one scout in the sled, and there has to be scouts pulling and pushing. So there's a rope in front that they're all on like sled dogs, and there's one in the back steering. And so who gets in the who do you put in the sled? Who pulls? Who pushes? Those are all it matters, because the kid pushing has to be fast enough, you know, just steering and pushing has to be fast enough not to be holding it back. The kid in the sled has to be light enough not to be
weighing it down.
You know, and the kids in front have to be strong enough and trip. If one of the kids trips while running, you're done. Like,
right.
And I was really afraid that one of them was going to trip and they would be
done. Where was Ben?
Ben was in front.
In front pulling.
Yeah, he was the oldest boy. And he's
the biggest kid. So he was a sled dog.
He was a sled dog. He was a great sled dog.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was. I had a moment where I realized what it's like to be the dad of an athlete. You know what I mean? Where you're seeing your kid compete. And I'm like, wow, this is dangerously addictive. Cheering on your son as he races to the finish line and wins. That is dangerously addictive. But it was a lot of fun. The girls were all excited for him too, and it was just so great. And then we got in the car and came because it was so cold. I just wanted to leave. But we had the award ceremony, and then we headed back. So it was a great day. He was walking on air. The girls had a blast. I think it was a really great day, and really happy about it.
Awesome. And I had a quiet day with Anthony and Lucia, who. What do we do?
Well, we were a little worried at first, because neither of them were enthused by the idea of spending the day alone with the other. because they tend to, when they're all here, they tend to have conflict because just like me and my sister,
they bicker.
We were the two youngest. I was Anthony and she was Lucia, and bickering, and they have that conflict. So they were a little worried,
but it was great. I mean, we got up, we had breakfast. We went to the store and did a little bit of shopping, just the
necessities,
milk, butter, eggs, that sort of stuff. Gummy bears,
the necessities.
Very, very necessary gummy bears. Then we came home and we watched a movie. We watched The Secret of Rowan Inish.
Yes. A favorite.
Which is a family favorite. But also Lucia had got the book that the movie is based on for her birthday or Christmas, one of the two. And so that was kind of, I thought it would be fun treat to see the movie and like compare how true is it to the book, which they thought was really good. And then I cooked. I spent the rest of the day cooking.
Yes. What did you make? You made a bunch of stuff.
Let's see. I made some pasties with some leftover pulled pork from the freezer.
Right.
So sort of, let's clean out the freezer and get rid of this pulled pork. Then I made for
which
dinner.
Which was good.
Right.
Was good, yeah.
And for dinner, I made miso soup.
Yep.
And I feel like there was something else I made too, but
the modified miso,
yes,
with the noodles and
It's miso soup, but then we serve it over noodles. We had udon noodles and rice noodles, which kind of makes it a little bit more filling and makes it a main course.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, all the people who had been
away for the day,
out in the cold for the day, were very happy to have hot soup for dinner,
so good.
And hot pasties for dinner. So that turned out to be really good that we had both, because I don't think the soup would have been quite enough for the kids who'd been running around all day outside.
Yeah, although I was still pretty full, so I nibbled on some pasty, but I really liked the soup.
Yeah, so that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, and then Sunday, we
made a strategic decision.
Yes. Oh, it snowed.
Yes.
Ironically,
we got about 4 inches of snow overnight.
Right. And because why does it snow? Oh, it always seems to snow on a Saturday night. It just seems that like it snows on a Saturday more than any other day. And so Sunday morning, it's the tricky thing because we go to an early mass, but I got to clear the snow before we can get out. So what do I got to get up at 5:30 in the morning and wake up all the neighbors with the snowblower? So, like you said, we made the strategic decision to go to the later mass.
Especially in light of the fact that the kids were going to be extra tired.
Right, extra tired from the day before, because we had to get up early the day before as well on Saturday. So, we got up, we kind of puttered a bit, and then I took my shower and kind of hung out. And then you kind of said, you know, we do have to leave about 9:30, so about 9 o'clock I went out. And did this.
I was a little bit worried about that being cutting it a bit too close.
I was cutting it too closer than I should have. And if there had been more snow, it would have been trickier. But as it was, I mean, even using the snowblower with that much snow, it was more like even like 3 inches. I could have done it with a shovel, perhaps. It was wet, so it was a bit heavier. But I hadn't used the snowblower at all. And the end of the driveway, if you're not from an area where you get snow, while you might get 3 inches of snow on most of the driveway, the end of the driveway, when the plows come through, they push all the snow from the street to the edge of the street, and that all piles up the end of the driveway. So if you've got 3 inches of snow on the most of the driveway, at the end of the driveway, you're going to have 6 inches of snow. And you multiply that when you get more snow. So when you have 6 inches of snow, you get 18 inches on the end of the driveway. It's exponential. So using the snowblower at the end of the driveway was fine. Worked out better. And then we got to mass. We got to the 10 o'clock mass, which was a little different, which also it does kind of throw things off, because by 10 o'clock, we're usually home and we're just heading out to mass. And I think that kind of threw us all off a little bit.
Everyone felt a little bit off kilter.
Yeah. I mean, the day ends up being like suddenly shorter. So we got home, we all had lunch, you cut my hair and Anthony's hair, and then we finally took down the Christmas tree and the decorations.
That was our Sunday project.
We're
too busy on Saturday.
We're not uber Catholic. We're just too lazy to take down our decorations on the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord. We're lucky if we get it. We got it by Candlemas, but we did get it by Candlemas.
That tree was really dry.
It was really dry. Not as dry as some I've seen. Some of my Facebook friends, I saw one where all of the needles had fallen from it. It was a Charlie Brown tree. This was a bare tree. One of my friends. This one wasn't as bad. But so the kids helped. They took the ornaments down. We still got a few things we got to put away.
I actually would have done it on Saturday, except Ben really, really wanted to help take the ornaments off. He said, "Don't you dare take them down on Saturday. Taking them off is part of the fun." So there was actually a little bit of strategizing going on there.
Okay, that's interesting that that's something he enjoys, the ritual of the season for him.
Right. I mean, I think part of it's just like he really enjoys sort of looking at all the ornaments and like thinking about like them. You know, they all have like sentimental value. We got them at different times and that sort of thing.
They broke my Galileo 7 Star Trek ornament. They broke the nacelle off of one of the sides. I've had that thing for 20 some odd years, more maybe. Actually, probably closer to 30. Years at this point. Yeah. I'm not even going to think about how much it would be worth. But it's okay. It's just a Christmas ornament. It's fine. I actually even thought for a minute about just tossing it, you know. But, you know, whatever. It's a little broken thing. It's you hang it so that you can't see it on that side of the tree and you're fine.
Right.
So we got that away. We still, like I said, we still got a few things. We got to put the books away. I still got this box of Christmas books next to me, and the nativity scene is still out there.
That's
in the
true.
Window. So we still got a few things.
Bins actually have to be, you know, tidied up to the point where they can actually shut, because right now
move to the shed before we get too much snow to get to the shed. That's always the trick. Otherwise it lives in the living room till spring, till Easter. Hey, we can put the Christmas decorations away.
Uh-huh.
So we'll get a few things to go. So that's basically, and that was Saturday and Sunday. I mean, really, we haven't really done much else. We're cooped up. We need to get out. We need to go someplace. We need to go to a museum. We need to go to a zoo. We need to do something. I'm feeling real, but we've had doctor's appointments and we have other things. And it's just,
we had two doctor's appointments last week. So basically this past week, we had two doctor's appointments. Isabella started her ornithology class.
Oh, right. That's right.
And
that went
and
well.
And then we had Zena on one day, and then we did grocery shopping on another day. And that's all 5 days.
Yes.
That didn't leave us a day for field trip or anything like that.
Right. It's getting trickier because, you know, Tuesday night is scouts, so we can't really go anywhere Tuesdays. Monday, I can't go anywhere because I've got podcast recordings all day. And then Wednesday night, I could probably do it. I mean, if we went, I could be home in time to record Secrets of Technology. But she's got her Wednesday ornithology class for a few weeks now. How many weeks is that?
I think it's, I want to say like 6 to 8 weeks. I'm not sure.
All right. So not forever, but a couple months. And then, so that leaves us Thursday and Friday, and you got to do some shopping in there somewhere. It becomes trickier. It's so funny how you go through these seasons of life and how your family evolves, and how, you know, at times it starts out, it's really hard to get out, and then it gets easier to just put a baby in a carrier and leave. And then you have another child and it gets hard again. And then the kids become a little older and it's easier, and then it's harder. And then now you have so much going on. It's just kind of funny how sometimes it's just like pack them up and go. And then other times it's, there's so much going on. And it's hard to predict what life will be like. But if there's one thing I've learned, this is just a season for now, and eventually it'll change, and then we'll be easier to do things again.
Maybe.
Yeah, you're right. Well, we were saying last night? It was kind of Lucy. What was Lucy saying? But I was saying something to the effect of, you know, eventually it's just going to be you and me and mommy here. When all the others have grown and gone on their way out into the world, you'll be the only one here with us.
That's really weird to think about.
It's really weird to think about. And she'll be, you know, a teenager by then. She'll be, you know, older teenager, but still, that's the day. And then but I can already hear my friends saying, and then they come back. yeah, that's been our week. So we're Okonomiyaki part two this week. That's something we cooked for dinner. We were able to, we finally got the Kewpie mayonnaise, which is the Japanese mayonnaise brand, and that's a part of it. And we got the nori flakes. That was another part of it. The seaweed flakes. And then you tried a slightly different recipe with less batter, but also including kale this time, right?
Yeah. One of the recipes I looked at had kale in addition to cabbage. And so I picked up some kale at the store. It was like a weird flat leaf kale. It wasn't the super curly kale. Not that it really matters, I suppose, but I don't remember the varietal name, but it was something or other.
But how did this one work? Do you feel like
this one? I think that the taste was good. The technique still needs some ironing out.
Mm-hmm.
The recipe I looked at actually suggested, and it seemed too fiddly to me. It suggested that you divide the cabbage up into four smaller mixing bowls, and then you divide the batter up and you mix each one, like a quarter of the batter in each bowl.
Was one serving,
and each bowl would be one pancake's worth.
Yeah.
And I thought that's silly, that dirtying four more bowls in addition to like the other bowls that I had already dirtied. This is like, I'm looking at like a dozen bowls
right
in the course of this meal. So I didn't. And then I realized why they suggested that, which was that when you put it all into one bowl, all the batter kind of seeps down to the bottom. So the first pancake didn't have nearly enough batter, and the last pancake had too much batter.
Interesting. Yeah, that was the interesting thing about it. The first one seemed way too dry.
It was.
Yeah. So it was hard for it to stay. It stayed together, but it was harder for it to stay together. But the last one was very pancakey, very battery. You're right. Yeah. There was even like batter sleeping out at the edges.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's still going to work it a little bit. Try maybe the next one might be the thing. We might find the perfect combination of things. We might have to get some more bulldog sauce.
Yeah. I ended up using actually a bunch of the bulldog sauce in the pork pasties.
That's interesting. All right. So, that brings me to, I want to go to an Asian grocery store. Now, we're quite lucky in that where we live, there are a number of Asian grocery stores. In fact, the very next town over, Randolph, has a large Vietnamese community. But then another town, two towns over, Quincy, it's like 30% of the population is Asian. It's a very, very Asian town. And they now have like two or three Asian like grocery stores, not just like little corner shops, but like the one that just opened, that's like a California chain. It was in the paper today. There's this California chain, which they call, it's like the Asian Wegmans. Like they have hot foods that they have, like a hot deli, and then they sell prepared foods. They have a whole section of live seafood, and then they have all of a huge produce section. So they have all this stuff in all the ingredients of this giant noodle section. In a refrigerated section, so
that sounds like the place that we went to that one time in Dallas. Do you remember?
Yeah, where we got the Chinese black vinegar, but yeah. Better. But this one is like supposed to, like, I saw pictures. This one is much like it feels like a Stop and Shop. It's got the quality of the way it's set up. Whereas like the one in Dallas was still kind of like, how do I phrase it? Kind of chaotic, you know, you had to kind of know what you were doing.
Yeah, I don't have very clear memories of that because I was pregnant at the time and trying not to let the fish sauce overwhelm me with like
the smell of the
nausea. Yeah. It smelled like somebody had spilled about a dozen bottles of fish sauce, which is probably what had happened. Anyway,
yeah.
I was very queasy to begin with. And then like that almost sent me over the top. I think I ended up leaving, actually, and sitting in the car and letting you guys finish the shopping.
Right. I needed Chinese black vinegar, and this was the place that had it. So we went and got it. So, So I want to get over to one of these, at least one of these Asian markets, because this buying the stuff through Amazon, you can get most of the stuff, but it's either wicked expensive or they're shipping it from Japan or China or Korea, where depending on what it is you're buying, or, you know, it's expensive. It's just a pain. And I'd rather just go to the local shop and buy it and be done with it and, you know, make a list of the things I want and go, because we're doing way more shopping. I'm sorry, cooking of Asian recipes than we have in the past.
You can make a field trip and take all the kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do it. So that's what we're eating. So let's talk about what we've been watching. I'm still working my way through the Stormlight Archive book. It is taking, like, I warned you, this takes forever to read. This is a huge book. But so let's talk about what we've been watching. You and I watched, let's talk about Groundhog Day first. We watched
Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day.
Classic.
Now, I was watching this because we were recording the Secrets of Groundhog Day for the Secrets of Movies and TV Shows podcast. That episode will be out later this week, I think. It's going to be timed for just before Groundhog Day, so it should be out very soon. Might be next week, actually. But in any case, I needed to watch it. You wanted to watch it with me, even though you've watched it recently.
I actually watched it, and I can't even remember why I watched it. Something brought it up that I was reading or something else I was watching.
Blog post somewhere.
Probably. I don't even remember. Anyway, I rented it and just watched it on my laptop. You were doing something else. I don't even remember what. But it's a movie that's, I think, more fun to watch with someone else.
Yes.
Like, I enjoyed it rewatching it. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is a really good. I have to say that when I watched it with you, it was like 20 times better.
Right. Well, so when I watch a movie for a podcast, I stop, I take notes, and then sometimes we talk about it as we're going, you know, in the pause and that sort of thing. And that kind of helps.
I think that's true. When you stop and pause and, like, talk in the middle, I think you notice more things. Like,
this is our thing, though. We watch TV shows and movies together, and we pause it and say things. This is why we don't watch live TV, because you can't pause it. But we used to do this with Lost all the time. We would get it on the DVR, and we'd be watching the episode and we'd be pausing, like, oh, did you notice this and that and the other thing and this here and that? And
yeah, it's much more fun.
Yes. So we're always doing that. So it would drive other people crazy too, if people tried to watch this stuff with us. Although your sister did this with us.
Well, my sister likes to pause and stop. And I mean, she's like the queen of stopping and talking in the middle of a show. So
right. It
doesn't drive her crazy.
Right. But I know there are people who it would drive them crazy. So I get that. But yeah, we had a great time. I love this movie. I mean, I really do. It's uplifting. It's hopeful. It says good things about human nature. And it says something so universal about human nature that many different philosophies, religions can look at it and go, yes, this is true. Buddhists think it says something true about Buddhism. Catholics see something Catholic in it. Protestant Christians see it. Even atheists will see something in it that appeals to them. You know, it says something universal about human nature, and it's really great the way it does it with this romantic comedy, which is essentially was a romantic comedy.
I guess it's kind of dark. I mean, it's like,
well, there are parts
comedy
that are dark. Yeah, there are parts that are dark, black comedy. But when I say romantic comedy, this is how it's marketed. This is how Hollywood categorizes it, the genre they put it in.
Yeah, I guess I'm
it somewhat defies the genre a little bit. But in the end, what do you have? You have Bill Murray, who's funny, and you have a guy and a girl falling in love.
Right.
That's a romantic comedy.
Yeah. But
it's so much more than that.
When you think romantic comedy, you do not think something like Groundhog Day, which is, it's just so much more than a romantic comedy.
So much happens. So much. It's such a journey for him. And if you want to hear all of what I have to say about it, you know, definitely subscribe to the Secrets of Movies and TV Shows and listen to that, because I had a great time talking with Mike Denz and Shelley Kelly about it for a while. All the great lines, all the great scenes.
I also enjoyed the one that we rented, bought.
It
had some special features.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed listening to some of the interviews and stuff that was on it, too.
They had the 25th anniversary interviews. So this was from about 5-6 years ago, or 20th anniversary, so about 10 years ago. And it was interviews with The screenwriter, Danny something or other. My brain goes nowhere when I lose the stuff in my memory. I have no memory anymore. But Harold Ramis, the director, Andy McDowell, the star, Stephen Tobolowsky, who plays Needlehead Ned. Needlehead.
Needlehead.
Everyone always thinks it's Needle Nose, but it's specifically, I realized that it's Needlehead Ned. Ned the Needlehead. It's because it rhymes.
I guess that's just, I can't remember that.
But Stephen Tobolowsky, the actor, had some of the best insights.
Oh, yeah. His insights were awesome. I'm like, he's a very minor character. Yes. In the movie.
Am I right or am I right?
I mean, really minor character. But, oh, yeah, his interview, I can see why they included so many clips from him, yeah, because he had some great insights into the meaning of the movie.
No Bill Murray, which is interesting. But part of that is because, as we noted, sadly, in the podcast, in the course of this movie, Bill Murray and Harold Ramis had a big falling out. And they were... You know, they weren't friends for many years until right before Harold Ramis got a terminal disease, and basically almost on his deathbed, they reconciled.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a sad thing, but
that is very sad.
Yeah. But in the course of it, and you could kind of tell Harold Ramis was saying some things about Bill Murray that were a little bit. He said it with a smile on his face, but he was speaking very, truth about Bill.
It was diplomatic.
Right.
But you could tell that there was a little bit of an edge to it.
He was saying like how, you know, some of Bill's humor can be a little mean, and you know, he gets that just rides that line of being mean, and you know, some of that stuff, and you could kind of see it. And some of Bill's personality comes out in Phil Connors, the character, as in the humor there. I guess Bill Murray rewrote some of it with the screenwriter, which is interesting, and added some of his own. Because Bill Murray was also at the same time going through a divorce with his wife at the time. So you could see him working out some of this stuff in the character that he played. Again, just a great movie. So Groundhog Day. And then I also went and saw the new movie 1917.
Which I'm still a little miffed that I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I mean, you could come with me, but someone's got to watch the kids. You could come with Father Chip and me and be on the podcast with us because that was for our coffee and cinema episodes of.
But then we'd have to get a babysitter.
Yes, so I'll get it. I definitely want to see this again because it's worth it. It's up for Best Picture, Oscar, Best Director, Best Cinematography. Definitely should win Best Cinematography. Great movie, fantastic movie. It's about World War One, events of World War One. It is a movie of it is literally a journey, but it's also a metaphysical journey or spiritual journey that happens. It is the way of the cross, which, by the way, at the beginning of the movie, it says this takes place on April 6th. It's a course of 24 hours, April 6th, 1917, which in 1917, April 6th was Good Friday. I mean, and it was also the day that the U.S. entered the war, which is, probably also had significance. But they chose that date for some reason. And I feel like it was because it was Good Friday, because this is a way of the cross that they go through here.
Interesting.
It's an amazing movie. Great acting. A lot of great actors who have very small cameo appearances, like smaller roles. Benedict Cumberbatch, Mark Strong, Andrew Scott, which is funny because both Sherlock and Moriarty are in this movie.
Interesting.
Colin Firth is in it, and several other people that you'd... the guy from Game of Thrones, one of the Starks, the one who dies. they all die. but Robb Stark in that one, yeah. He played the actor who played Madden. But anyway. Great, really great movie. Highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just started watching last night a TV show on Netflix, right. A series that I'd heard people talking about, people praising. It didn't appeal to me at first, but I was looking for something, and I turned it on. It was called Raising Dion.
And I wasn't, it was like, okay.
We just watched Doctor Who when you were in the room.
Yeah. And another superhero TV show. I'm not really all that excited, but I'll watch.
Well, it's so much more than that.
I really liked it a lot.
So
I'm like, you better wait and watch this with me because I don't want to miss it.
Right. So it's the story of this single mom in Atlanta, a widow, and her son, 7-year-old boy named Dion. And her husband died. He was a storm chaser, one of those guys who goes to wherever there's big storms, and died in a hurricane in New Orleans. And her son,
which you don't find out until like the second episode.
You find out at some point. That's not revealing too much. You know he died,
right?
I'm not gonna spoil much that you don't see either in the preview or right up front. Anyway, her son, and this is again right up front, starts having these abilities, including like telekinesis, ability to make things move with his mind, and other things he starts doing, exhibiting these powers. And you think about in a 7-year-old boy who doesn't have emotional regulation, who doesn't have a lot of what's the concrete thinking? He doesn't have very good abstract thinking, reasoning ability,
right?
Reason at all.
I mean, classically, 7 is just at the age of reason,
right?
In terms of Catholic understanding of,
and yet he has these abilities that are potentially catastrophic depending on how strong these abilities are. And she's this single mom who's just unemployed,
and he has no like control,
right?
He can't actually turn it on and off at will, and it seems to be like that when he gets emotional and agitated, things get crazier.
It gets crazier, right?
Crazier. So I really, really loved the way he's very 7. I mean, oh my goodness,
7.
He is such a 7-year-old boy. having had 2 7-year-old boys, I really feel like they. I mean, of course, the child who's playing him, I think, is actually 7.
Right.
So they didn't try to like cheat by having an older kid,
like a 10-year-old pretending to be 7.
Pretend to be 7. And he has the emotional regulation of a 7-year-old. He
acts it well anyway.
He gets, you know, distracted in the middle of things. He forgets what he's doing.
There's literally a moment where his mother's trying to get him to do something and he says, "Squirrel," and runs after it.
And runs and chases a squirrel.
It's literally a squirrel moment.
Which I loved that moment.
Yes. And there's the best part of it so far isn't the superhero, the superpower stuff. It's the mom trying to, you know, to take care of her son in a crazy world, in the craziest circumstances, do the best she can. The son loving his mother, them trying to deal with their grief, their shared grief, their separate grief, the difficulties of being a kid in a new, they've just moved, so he's in a new school. And then this other big thing drops out of the sky on them, this crazy thing, which she's now knows the scary of what if people find out that her son has this ability. Well, this is scary. We got to watch out. And then.
Right. I mean, it's kind of classical sort of like E.T., you know, what if people find out.
Right.
Something's going on.
And then more weird things begin to happen. Right. And obviously this is going to be much bigger.
But there's also a whole bunch. I mean, a lot of the plot line is she loses her job. She's late for, you know, they're late for school. Her trying to negotiate being a single mom.
We've watched 2 episodes, right?
Right. The first 2 episodes. The
first 2 episodes. A lot of it is just being family, but it's not boring. I mean, it could be like, I don't get a lot out of these like TV shows, which are about just people living their lives. It's like, I want more to it. And there is more. So it's got this part of it, which is just them being family, but it's also got this other element, which is a mystery and a bigger thing and these powers. And there's hints at that there's a much bigger thing going on here. And I've heard people say, without spoiling, you know, I'm not spoiled on it yet, that there's a big thing coming that's somewhat unexpected. You know, there's a turn. I don't know if you call it a twist, but a turn in things. So I'm looking forward to how that comes. And I've seen that it's already a second season out, so I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
And I liked the character of his godfather.
Who's dad's best friend.
Who kind of drops in, and it's kind of the typical clueless single guy. And yet there's something more about this character. I kind of like him.
Yeah. There's more to come. Yeah. He's dedicated to, he's kind of bumbling, socially awkward, but yet he's completely dedicated to both Dion and to taking care of Dion's mom. And yet there's no weird attraction thing going on there. There's no like weird, like potential romance stuff there.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they do that later on, but not at the point we're at. Standard disclaimers apply. We've only watched the first two episodes. This thing could go off the rails in the next episode. I mean, this is the standard disclaimer when we talk about something we've seen the whole thing of. So don't blame us if you watch it and it gets something weird, bad, awful happens. But so far, we're both hooked on this. And so I'm looking forward to watching more of it. Coming up, actually, probably by the time you hear this, is new season of Project Blue Book is going to drop. And you haven't watched that.
I haven't seen any of this.
But it's really interesting. It's based on the real UFO investigations from the 1950s by the U.S. Air Force, Project Blue Book. They take many liberties with it. The paranormal things actually happen. It's like X-Files in the 50s.
X-Files, okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, but much more focused on UFO stuff and not the other stuff. That X-Files covered everything, ghosts and, you know, demons and weird genetic experiment and all kinds of other stuff. This is really just UFO stuff, but it's a lot of fun. It's been a good show so far, so I'm looking forward to this next season. All right, so let's talk about our last bit of topic, which is we wanted to talk about the homily from Sunday's Mass that we went to. We've been having a series of guest priests, guest celebrants.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned that on the show in the past.
They've all been very tall. So we had this Father Zimmerman who told us he is the one of the assistant vocation directors for the diocese and also teaches at the seminary. Young guy, I'd say he got maybe 30.
Yeah, he seemed young to me.
Yes, I mean, this we're getting to that point where they all seem young, but and maybe he's like 40 years old and he just looks young. But his defining characteristic is this guy is 6'8" if he's an inch. I mean, this guy was tall.
Yeah,
and he's got a deep voice. It's really kind of I like when priests pray with a deep voice, like the voice of God preaching at you. But
okay.
So we had him give the homily. So the readings were, okay, just to, as a reminder, were from Isaiah, and the gospel was John the Baptist seeing Jesus and saying, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world," and testifies to seeing the Spirit come down upon Jesus like the dove from heaven, and all that stuff, that part of it. So it's really kind of a continuation from last week of the baptism of the Lord.
Right.
Which is interesting. So Father starts off by talking about how he teaches seminary classes. And one of the things he does is because a lot of these guys are coming to seminary, sometimes not in many cases, not straight from college, but they haven't been in school for a long time or they even
never went to college.
I think to go into seminary, you have to have a philosophy undergrad. So I think they have to, if they haven't been to college, they have to go to college before they can go to seminary.
In any case, he said that he was teaching a study skills class to the seminarians. We both thought that this was a really, really great speaking technique, by the way, because he talked about how he told the students the importance of sitting up straight, making eye contact, nodding.
Right.
And
if you do these things, then you will be more alert and absorb more of the lecture. And I'm thinking,
if you act engaged, you'll actually be more alert and engaged,
which is a great thing to tell people at the beginning of your homily when you want them to be more engaged.
I definitely felt like I was doing a lot more of the, like, I don't don't always necessarily make eye contact. And I felt like I needed to be looking at him because, you know, he just told me to do so.
There's this weird compulsion, isn't there? Like this weird psychological compulsion. Like now that he's told us to do that, I feel like I have to do that, not disappoint him and be the bad student.
Right, right. It was good psychology. Like,
right. And the reason he was saying that, he also talked about mirror neurons, where if we smile at if someone smiles at us, there's a part in our brain, these mirror neurons that want that tell us that we need to smile back.
Right. And then he also went on he segued from that to talking about how when we smile, we actually feel happier.
Right.
If you frown, you feel sad. If you smile, you feel happy. And so he kind of talked about like how if we go around smiling at other people, we can
spread joy. Literally,
Spread joy as a contagion. We can make other people's lives better, happier.
Which made me think if we go around yawning, you can also spread yawns.
Well, this is true.
So it might be my next experiment. But yeah. And so he went from that to talking about, you know, sometimes even if you don't feel happy, you can bring happiness to where you are by smiling and acting happy until you are happy, until you do have joy and other people around you. Because when the other people around you are joyful, that's infectious. You become joyful. So you can give yourself joy by making the people around you joyful by smiling at them and acting happy.
Right. And then he connected it to being saints.
Right.
And he said that, okay, so all of us here in the church are not like super holy people, not necessarily.
Right. No Mother Teresa's here.
Right. But he said he was counseling a sort of fake it till you make it attitude,
right,
which is saying that if you want to be holy, and it seems really like a high impossible goal, think, what would a saint do right now, today, here in this moment? What would a holy person do? And then do that thing. You don't have to actually feel holy. You don't have to actually even be all that, you know, emotionally engaged in what you're doing. But if you do the thing, then, well, you're actually doing the thing. I mean, so you are being holy.
For example, oh, when I pray, I just feel so dry. I feel like I'm just talking to nobody. It's just, oh, it just doesn't feel like this, like God is there and responding to me. Okay, but keep doing it. Do it as if God is there. Keep praying a rosary. Keep reading your Bible. Keep doing the divine office.
Oh,
keep,
yeah. I really liked that part of it. Yeah. It doesn't matter if you feel it or not. And he's like, you know, just like having a conversation with a person you love. Sometimes you don't necessarily feel it in the moment, but you make the effort. You say, I love you. You give them a kiss because
I always feel it in the moment. Always. Yeah. I'm telling you now. It's my defense.
but you do it. Because you value that connection, you value the right person, you value the relationship. And so,
which is a great lesson, because it's not always about emotion. Too many times do we put too much emphasis on, you got to feel it. You got to feel an emotion or it's not real. Well, it's not always about the emotion. Sometimes it's just about the effort.
Right. So I really liked his fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. Approach. And then he talked about he did eventually connect that back to the readings, and he talked about
the reading to Isaiah.
Isaiah.
There's a verse in Isaiah. The reading was from Isaiah 49, verses 5 and 6 here. It says the God is talking to Isaiah, saying, you know, you're my servant, Israel, through whom I show my glory, and talks about, you know, the Lord has formed me as his servant from the womb, that Jacob may be brought back to him and Israel gathered. In other words, to reform Israel. But then God said, it's too little for you to be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and restore the survivors of Israel. I will make you a light to the nations, that my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth. So it's not enough for you to just save Israel. This is what he's saying to Isaiah. Like, yeah, okay, I lifted you up to save Israel. But now I'm telling you, that's not enough. That's looking too small.
Which
we need you. I need you to save the nations.
I need you to save the world.
Right.
Which reminded me actually a lot of, to bring it back to the gospel and John the Baptist, it reminds me of Zechariah's canticle. which he recites.
Which you say every day.
You say every day
in the Divine Office.
But it says to be a light to the nations.
Right. Right. Because I don't, now that you've put me on the spot, I don't remember it off the top of my head either. But yes. And in this, he says, I'm trying to look at the gospel here where John says, a man is coming after me who ranks ahead of me because he existed before me. I did not know him, but the reason why I came baptizing with water was that he might be made known to Israel. And then later on, he says, the one who sent me to baptize with water told me, on whomever you see the Spirit come down and remain, he is the one who will baptize with the Holy Spirit. Now I have seen and testified that he is the Son of God. In other words, John was the last prophet of Israel. He baptized with water. But Jesus is coming to baptize with the Holy Spirit, and that will baptize. That is for the whole world. John is for Israel, but Jesus is for the whole world. I mean, this is the declaration of the mission of Christ, is to all of creation, all of salvation history is encompassed in this one verse. And wow, I mean, that was just it was pretty cool to see how he, like, the priest from last week, the Jesuit, you know, the very Jesuit three parts, boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm going to say. This is what I'm going to say. And then Father Zimmerman's style was just slightly different, you know, but yet, man, he really takes it home there. It was really good to have that. Incidentally, on the way home, Anthony, who's 8,
yes,
says, wow, that was a long homily.
And I kind of cringed. I'm like, oh, great. Yeah. Here we go.
He says, but interesting. In other words, he was paying attention. He heard it. He liked it. He got something out of it. I mean, to hook an 8-year-old boy, that's, if I ever see Father Zimmerman, I want to tell him, you got an 8-year-old boy to say that was an interesting homily. That's a pretty high accomplishment.
That is actually.
So very, it was really, really good homily and a beautiful mass as usual and very appreciative. So anything else?
I was going to say, actually, our Benedictine nuns of Mount St. Mary had a nice reflection on the gospel too. They focused on, Mother Sophia focused on the fact that John doesn't know Jesus. He says, I don't know him, but he was made known to me.
Right.
So she says, you know, how can John not know Jesus? Well,
they were cousins, of course.
Right. But she kind of focuses on then, like, her own profession and the priest who says something along the lines of finding Jesus in the people who she sees in her daily life. Mm-hmm. In other words, her religious sisters. But right. But also for us, that would be our family. Do we find Jesus in the people who drive us crazy, in the annoyances? Do we see Jesus's face?
Mm.
Where we are.
Right. You don't have to go far to find Jesus. He's right. He's with you in the people around you every day. That's interesting. That's a good one. All right. So, I think that about wraps it up, for another week. We do want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Elizabeth T, Carrie B, Jason E, James I, and Adam S. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. What did you think of any things we had to talk about today? You can let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or by sending us an email to bets@sqpn.com. And any relevant links from our discussion will be in our show notes at sqpn.com. I would like to ask, I checked iTunes today. There hasn't been any new podcast reviews for several months. I would greatly appreciate it. This is not for a stroke my ego or make me feel good. If you could write a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast from, that helps notify the algorithm that runs the directory. Hey, there are people who like this, and therefore you should show it to other people who have subscribed to similar podcasts as this person. So it helps us to grow the audience of the podcast. And so we really do appreciate it. Also, it's a way of getting feedback from you on the things that you like about the podcast. And we'd appreciate that too. And if you can, just or straightforward, share the podcast with your friends. That also helps us grow our community and reach more listeners. So until next time, I'm Don Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.